CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And that's something like I'm still learning and still dealing with, because I don't like to go to therapy when I feel good. Like, I don't want to go in there and be like, oh, let's unpack, you know, all this stuff from my life. Like, no, I feel great. Like, I'm fine. And that's something that I definitely had to work through. Like, it took me a long time to accept, like, depression and being something that I associate with myself, because I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to identify with it. For me, it felt like that's something that happens to, like, other people. Not that there's anything wrong with people it happens to, but I was like, that's not me.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Real Pod. I'm Victoria Garrick, former D1 athlete and mental health and body image advocate. Every Wednesday, I'll be bringing you awesome guests, weekly inspiration, and the realest conversations around everything and anything. Now let's get real. Welcome back to Real Pod. Thanks for tuning in today. Whether you are a newcomer, welcome. Hello, I'm Victoria. Thanks for coming. If you are back for more or you're a weekly listener, I really appreciate you. And our guest today really embodies the meaning of Real Pod. She is so raw, so real, so honest about her mental health experiences and her experiences as a student athlete. Our guest is Anna Cockrell. She is a USC student athlete, track and field star. I am not over-exaggerating when I say star. She is a national champion. She is a team captain. She has broke and set records at USC, and she even medaled in the Pan America Cup games. So athletically, she is an absolute star. And academically, Anna is a straight A student, so much so that it wasn't until the semester she was graduating that she received her first A minus. I know, insane. As a student athlete, how successful she was, also a straight A student. We are going to dive into all of that today, why she strove for success and perfection, what limits she pushed herself to accomplish that, and as a result, what happened to her and her mental health in that pursuit. We're also going to dive into one of the most telling and life-changing experiences in Anna's sports journey. And I'm not going to spoil too much now, but she experienced a track meet where she made a crucial mistake and it cost the team the national title. And we're going to talk about that today, because I think the way that she handled that and her approach and outlook on the whole situation is so empowering for any athletes out there that feel like they missed the ball on game point, they missed the overtime shot, whatever it was. How do we deal with those moments? Anna and I are going to dive into that today. And I also want to mention that she is a big activist and advocate for mental health, but also for Black Lives Matter. Anna created the UBSAA, which is the United Black Student Athletes Association, which was organized to help USC and USC Athletics take bold, decisive action to combat racial inequality and support Black student athletes and Black students. So we have so much to dive into today. I can't wait for you to listen to it. Please give it up for Anna Cockrell. All right. We're going. It's your first podcast. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're already doing great. I can't believe that you are so outspoken and you're such a leader and you're kind of new to some of the, maybe like a podcast or an interview, because you have such an incredible story that I can't believe I'm the first one to be like, let's discuss and dive deep into this thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I've done like interviews and stuff, and I'm comfortable talking because I was like a theater kid in middle school and the beginning of high school. But no, never done any podcasts or anything before. So this is a first for me.
I did not expect us to have the click and connection that we did on the live. I mean, I had athletes from athletics that they submitted and said, you know, we're willing to talk about mental health. But I just felt like when you came on, you were so real, so honest, saying things that are so relatable to athletes, you know, wanting to excel with our grades and excel on the field and then just feel like the pressure is overwhelming. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to get on Real Pod because this is something that so many athletes struggle with and people as well, you know, just whether it's mm-hmm. succeeding in their career or as a daughter or a sister or a brother. So I want to dive into everything today. I guess we can start with, tell me about what you were like as a freshman athlete at USC.
Oh gosh. I would say, like, you know, the kind of stereotypical, like, everything that can go wrong freshman year, that was like me. Like, I had, you know, difficulties with my roommate. My grandfather passed away unexpectedly. I had relationship issues. And that was all during first semester. So my freshman year was a struggle, to be honest. Like, it was, and I'm from North Carolina. So I had gone from, you know, small-ish town in North Carolina to moving all the way across the country and living in LA. And I, you know, that was what I wanted. And I felt like that was what I needed. And then I got there and I was just kind of instantly hit by like real life stuff. And it was the first time I'd ever had to deal with, you know, a death in the family by myself. The first time I was going through these things without, you know, the support of my parents and my sister and my brother. So it was really difficult for me just to adjust. And it was like the second kind of, when the homesickness first kind of started and then like that first week of classes, then I was like, okay, but I can do this. It was like one thing just started happening after another. So freshman year was really, really hard for me. And like when I look back on it, I can say, no, I was definitely depressed. Like I was not in a good place. And my way of coping with it was, okay, well, I'm just gonna work myself to death, basically. Like I'm gonna go as hard as I possibly can in every aspect of my life, and then I'll get home and I'll crash and I won't have to think about anything, and then I'll do it again the next day. So, I mean, like from an outside looking in perspective, people were like, you had a great freshman year
I was just thinking that. I'm like, didn't you break records freshman year? I can't believe that this was happening.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I guess like the way I handle my issues is by channeling it into something else and not really dealing with it, not wanting to process it. And so I just like would go as hard as I could. And it's, I think the challenge for me became, it was almost like I was rewarded for that because my grades were great. And then I was an All-American as a freshman, indoor and outdoor. And it was like that kind of in my mind was like, oh, well, this works. Like, I don't have to deal with how I feel. I don't have to deal with being sad because I can just work as hard as I possibly can all day long, crash, get up and do it again, and it'll be fine. And then I'll be successful and then I'll be happy, right? Like that's kind of the end game. Or at least it was for me of doing all that stuff. Like, okay, well, I'm not feeling great, but if I keep working as hard as I possibly can, eventually I'll get there and I'll work myself into feeling better. And eventually that I realized that doesn't really work long-term.
Did you feel pressure to act like things were okay because everyone was celebrating your accolades?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, just for me, I wasn't comfortable expressing that like outwardly that I wasn't happy because SC was what I wanted. Like I knew from the moment I got into high school that I was going to leave. I was going to go out of state. I was going to go to a big school. I was going to run. I was going to do well. And it was like, I put so much into this like image that I had of what college was going to be for me that I couldn't deal with like accepting that it wasn't that. Yeah. Like I couldn't accept, or I couldn't show to anybody outside of like my sister and like one of my closest friends that things are not good right now.
Wow. I can relate so heavily. I mean, same thing, like dream to play at USC, you go there. And then everyone's like, you're killing it. Oh my gosh. Right. Like I was a walk-on and then I got playing time. And so it was like, yeah, like I love it. Like I'm killing it. And really I was like crying and so unhappy. And is this what it feels like to be at the top?
You know? Right. is it supposed to be like this? Like, I joke about it now, but in the moment, like, one of my things is I like sit in the shower and cry. So like, I joke about it with my friends now, but like whenever I walk past the place I used to live, I'm like, oh, that's a shower where I used to sob, because I did.
There's like, so many haunted places like that around campus.
Like
I go to USC and I'm like, that bush, that chair, that bench.
Right.
All the places I've cried.
Right. No, it's like, oh, I remember when I was walking home and I was like, keep it together, Anna, you're almost there. Then you can just get sitting down in the shower and like a movie scene, turn on the water and like cry.
Well, you know what?
So it was tough.
Blew my mind is like, I would be on the verge of tears or literally sobbing under my hood. And then someone from like a class who's not an athlete would be like, Victoria. And then I would be like,
hey,
hi. And then I would like turn it on for like 10 seconds. And then the minute they left, I was like, this is so messed up. Like,
right.
That was so fake of me, you know, like,
that's right.
I'm about, yeah. That's how I feel.
So, like, how are you? Everything's great. I'm fine. Thank you for asking. Life could not be better. Like,
yeah. See you in bio. Yeah. So this goes on your freshman year and you're not really letting people in on it, correct? Just like your sister, your main people, maybe kind of. Mm-hmm. People. So how did this lead into sophomore year? How did it affect your mental health and what was going on?
Yeah. So sophomore year, I think what was really good for me was I went home for part of the summer. I was in summer school, but I took like this oceanography class and he randomly started it late. So like I went and I just went to the beach.
I feel like I took the same one. It's the one everyone takes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know the one. What was his name? Like Lund or something?
Yeah.
He was like, I'll be on a boat doing research. So like class starts a week late. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went home and I was done competing for the season. So my family and I like went to the beach. So it was just like a really good reset for me. So I came in to sophomore year. I had a new roommate. I was feeling pretty good about things. Suddenly, like, I'm a captain on the team, so I've got to navigate, like, this new role. And I think things were good for the most part when I think about sophomore year. Like, there wasn't any major – it wasn't, like, the constant kind of struggle like freshman year was.
Yeah.
There were, like, incidents where it was, like, I was devastated by something. And I, like, again, when I look back on it, I still wasn't handling things in a healthy way. But it wasn't as – hard as freshman year was, and I had better relationships with the people on my team.
Because you kind of numb up to like what the lifestyle is. You're like, all right, right, I know how much practice I have. I know how hard, like I know it's not so much of a surprise.
But exactly.
I almost want to rewind to this roommate thing, because when I'm telling you our stories are so similar, freshman year, my roommate straight up moved out of our shared room and into the other, because that's how much they didn't want a room with me, because after games, I hope this person never listens, because after games, we came home after like away games and I didn't want to have guys in the room. I wanted to go to bed. I'm freaking exhausted. We've been traveling and playing games. And I guess that was a deal breaker. And so it was like the most passive aggressive. Like I just got home one day and like none of the stuff was in there. And I was like, okay, see you at practice.
Great. Yeah.
No, it's like you have a room with a stranger and you don't have a choice. And then it's like your coaches and the culture is like pushing you to all be best friends.
Right. And I think for me, I had difficulty like making friends in high school sometimes. So I really like idealized college and was like, SC is going to fix all my problems in a way. And like, I'll be in this brand new place. I'll be in a big city. Me and my teammates are going to be best friends. And then the reality is like, I get along with a lot of them, but if it weren't for track, there wouldn't be that much I have in common with some of them. And that's okay. But for me, I built it up to be like, we're going to be sisters and everything's going to be awesome.
I'm like, this is where I'm finding my bridal party. I mean, we're going to be.
Exactly. Everyone's like, oh, you meet your lifelong friends in college. And I'm like, well, perfect. Cause I have a team. So like I'm, in my mind, like we're all the people who were coming in with me, like my class, we had like a group text and I was like, yes, this is like, these are my people. We're going to be friends
how
until
it is
we
in the
die.
Summer. Yeah.
Like,
and then the cliques start to form and then you're eating your sandwich in the bleachers, calling your mom from the hotel. I'm like, my life story.
Yeah, no, for me, it was like when those things started happening, I just kind of shut down. Like I basically went into my own little like Anna world where all that mattered was I'm going to do my schoolwork and go to the track and go home and like nobody talked to me basically, which again, very unhealthy, but it also just was very bad for building up relationships with my teammates. So like my grandfather passes away and they're like, hey, are you fine? Are you good? Like, what do you need? And I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm fine. Like, and so I couldn't, it was hard for me to let people support me. And then, you know, when you kind of push people away, eventually they stop trying.
Right.
So then it becomes kind of like this cycle of, okay, I pushed everyone away because I was feeling like crap, but now does everyone hate me? Oh yeah, I think they all hate me. That kind of a thing.
Right.
Or at least that's how it was for me. So it was like that on top of like not having the best relationship with my roommate was like reinforcing this thing in my head of, oh no, they don't like me.
It's so easy to convince yourself like your team is against you. I feel like
yes.
I was like that from like even a playing standpoint, like, you know, they don't think I'm good enough. Like anytime I made a mistake, I was like, I'm not on scholarship. Like they're all realizing this is why, like even, you know, and so it was always, always easy to convince yourself, like the girls don't like you. And I think on all teams, there's this misconception, right? That we're going to have this amazing team where we're all best friends and life's going to be amazing. But every single team is going to have their issues, their fair share of drama. Mm-hmm. There's no picture perfect friendship or even friend group. I don't really think even the friends I know that have friend groups, I maybe envy a little bit. I've heard them talk about each other. I know things aren't always solid, but it's weird that yet we all still yearn for that girl group that's going to be
right.
Amazing.
Right. And I think we all kind of buy into that picture of it's supposed to be one way. Mm-hmm. And then the second it's not, it's like earth shattering. And I really think that I was like buying into this idea that we had to be like best friends and that's the only way we're going to be successful. In reality, you know, everybody's got different personalities and that's okay. As long as we can work together, like we don't have to braid each other's hair and stay up all night telling each other our life stories. Like we just have to be able to understand each other, work together and know that there's a goal beyond like what we want as individuals. But I think right. when I came in, there was so much like, you know, self-created pressure to be best friends that when it didn't happen instantly, I was like, okay, well they hate me, which is just not like the reality. And now that, you know, obviously I've got some distance from freshman year, when I talk to my teammates, they're like, nobody hated you. We just like, you just disappeared.
Like we thought you hated us.
Exactly. And it was like, you were kind of on your own thing and no one knew like if you were okay. And then the relationship started to get better once we got into like the spring semester, my freshman year, and we were on the road and we were traveling. And then that's when like, you know, you have those roommate situations with different people on the team.
Right.
So that kind of helped me start to like realize, oh, they don't hate me. Like that was definitely something that was in my mind. So that was great. And that, I think that's what helped make sophomore year a lot better than freshman year, was that I didn't have all of these kind of crazy preconceived notions in my head about what should be versus what actually was.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was hard though. And for me, it was kind of the opposite of what you're saying. I came in as like a scholarship kid and I had like international meet experience. So every time I messed up, it was like, I felt like everyone was looking at me like, aren't you supposed to be good? Like, aren't you supposed to be like super talented? And so it was like, you know, I'd just come off of World Juniors, the summer before I came to SC. And it just felt like I'm supposed to be like a World Junior champ, right? Like, what am I doing? Why am I sucking so hard at these workouts? Like,
right.
But it was completely different than what I was doing in high school. And the level of competition and practice was just, you know, it goes from at my high school, you know, I had training partners, but for the most part, I won every rep, to going to college. And, you know, I win a rep and I'm excited because I haven't won a rep in like a month, you know? So it was, all of it was just such an adjustment.
It's really eye-opening to hear that from you, because we both were experiencing that same like self-doubt or that same need to prove ourselves, even though I was at the bottom and you were at the top. And you don't always think that people are thinking, like I would never think the top people on my team would think that they had pressure because they were the top people. And similarly, you would probably think no one's expecting you to win or do good. Like you're the walk-on, like you're fine, mm-hmm. You're chilling. But yet when we're in that position, I think no matter how good you get or how much you're trying to get good, you're going to have this expectation that you're proving yourself at all times.
Right. It's absolutely.
It's really interesting. And also you talk about taking out this frustration and maybe the sadness and this grief on excelling. And I know something you talk a lot about is your perfectionism and that perfectionist yes. mindset, you know, when it comes to grades. I mean, my mind was blown. I think you told me you've never had an A minus until like senior year or something.
Crazy. Yeah, fall of my senior year.
So you have A's every single class for that's I'm speechless.
Yeah. It's no, I mean, it just became like, it was part of that kind of like, I have to prove myself thing where like, okay, so fall semester, freshman year, I'm homesick. I'm sad. Things are not going well. Like just not in a good place. It was like, okay, well, you know, what'll make me feel good doing well in school. Like, and so to get that like kind of reassurance when you get that paper back and it's like, oh, I got an A, like I got really into that little buzz. And I think for me, like when I was in a bad place, it was easy to start replacing trying to work through it and feel good about myself with external stuff like grades or winning a rep on the track or becoming an All-American. So freshman year, fall semester, I get a 4.0. And it was like, it was validating in a way that probably wasn't healthy. Like, yeah, I was super proud and I'd done well in high school, but I was like, okay, well, if I could push through all that stuff and get a 4.0, then I should be able to do it like every single time. And so then it became like that was something to prove because it kind of felt like people were like, oh, well, that was your freshman year. Let's see if you can do it again, right? So then it was like, okay, well, spring semester, we're on the road, got to do it again. Then sophomore year, it was kind of the same thing. And so then it became another thing that I felt like I had to live up to. And so that's why like, oh, go ahead.
Was that an internal thing you felt like you had to live up to? Or were you telling like your parents knew about your grades, your friends knew, and you were like the smartest on the team. And so you had external pressures as well.
Yeah, everyone knew because Coach Carol Smith-Gilbert will like, and I think it's fine and healthy and positive, but for someone who's going through the stuff that I was going through, it wasn't. But she like acknowledges the people who get above like, I think a 3.2 or something. So like, she'll have like, okay, if you got 3.2 or above, stand up, team claps for you. 3.5 or above, stand up. And then she'll like highlight the people who have like a 4.0. Usually we have a couple per semester, like one or two or three per semester. So like people knew, and it was like, I don't know if anyone was actually saying like, oh, she won't be able to do it again. But that kind of was like the narrative in my head.
Like, I want to stand up next time they say 4.0s, please.
Right. And it was like, okay, well, I did it this time. I have to do it again. Like it wasn't a freshman year fluke. It wasn't because like my freshman classes are easy, that kind of a thing. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. How long did this kind of go on? This need to achieve, this suppress the emotions and just perform?
Sorry, if you get confused with the timeline, let me know. Because so I graduated in 3 years, right? So
of course.
My like just pushing it way too far. So my junior year, like when I say junior year, like my junior year on the track, that was like my senior year academically. Uh-huh. So sorry if that gets confusing. But so my third year of college, this is fall semester. I have two semesters left. I'm going to do fall and the spring. And that was when things kind of really started to come crashing down because sophomore year had been like fine for the most part, but I just started feeling like so much pressure because it was, okay, well, I'm going to graduate in three and I'm going to have another year. What am I going to do? Like, I know I want to do grad school, but I don't know what grad program I want to do. So then it kind of became like this internal crisis of like, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life? And then I was studying for the GRE and that was really hard because I hadn't done math since high school. So now I'm like trying to learn math again. And then I also was in the communication honors program and I was developing an undergraduate thesis and I was having an incredibly hard time with that. So all of those things were happening. Fall is like pretty much our most intense training period because that's when we're building our base and really getting back in shape. So fall practice was just kicking my butt. And then I had a lot of night classes. So, oh, and then also I was volunteering with two political campaigns at the time because I had to for this class I was in. I was just so completely overwhelmed and like I would wake up in the morning and go to weights and then I'd go from that to volunteering with one of my campaigns. Then I'd go from that to practice in the afternoon and then I'd go from practice in the afternoon to night class because I love night class. So my days were really long and I would get home and just be like done. Like, I don't want to talk. I don't want to engage. I don't want, because I've been like up all day. I've been like smiling and like trying to be on 10 and like, you know, answering the phone. Hi, do you have time to talk about like Marshall Tuck's campaign for, you know, and then going to practice and I'm the captain. I got to like hype everybody up at practice and then I'm in class. And so I was just like exhausted. And some of those things that I hadn't fully dealt with started to like resurface. And then I started having all this doubt about like, am I smart enough? Am I talented enough to handle all of these things? Like, am I capable enough to do these things? How am I going to study for the GRE? My thesis is going nowhere. So
would you say this was the lowest point in your college career?
By far.
It's crazy to think that on paper, people would think this is the highest a student athlete could be. And yet off paper and in your real life, this is the lowest you've ever been.
Oh, by far. I mean, it was honestly terrible, because my relationships with everyone were suffering. Like, I was so exhausted that it was hard to like manage, you know, having friendships and having relationships. It was hard to like not be like snappy. It was hard to be at practice and like, okay, for me, like, I'm very direct, but everyone interprets things differently. And so I try to be really cognizant of how I talk to people at practice. But when I was feeling so exhausted and bogged down by everything, it was like that kind of filtering and managing of like how I talk was kind of going out the way. And so people were like, you're like being a bitch, you know, like you're being a bitch at practice. And I was like, well, I'm not trying to be. And then they're like, well, you are. And so then it was kind of like, okay, well, there's all these things going on and I'm stressed out. And so that kind of reignited like the people don't like me kind of thing that was going on in my head before. So it was definitely my lowest point. And I was just tired all the time, like just exhausted all the time. But then it was hard to sleep. So yeah, it was really, really difficult. And that pretty much went on like the entire fall semester of my third year. So this was last year.
And still nobody knew at this point.
Not at that point. Yeah. And then like in January, one of my teammates, I'll say her name, Dior Hall. I asked her to do my hair before a meet. And she was like, you haven't talked to me in like 3 weeks. And then you're just going to text me and be like, will you come braid my hair? She's like, that's messed up. And then I was like, that is messed up. Like, I get in my own kind of like depression world and don't recognize like, I think there's this feeling of like you're a burden to other people. And that's how I felt. Like if I told anyone, one, like I'm not supposed to be that person who's sad and who's struggling. And two, I'm going to burden them with my problems and they don't deserve that. And so then I ended up talking to Dior and being like, hey, this is what's been going on. Like, I feel like crap all the time. Like, I'm sad and stressed all the time. And I can barely like manage anything anymore. Like I'm going to class, but it feels like I'm functioning like on bare minimum level at this point. And so Dior was like the first person on my team that I told, and she was like, go to a psychologist, basically. And so we had a long conversation about that. And I've been in therapy at like different points in my life, but I've always had a hard time sticking with it.
Because for me, this ask for help.
It's very hard for me to ask for help. And then the minute like I have a good day, I'm like, I'm cured. So it's like, it's hard for me to want to go back, you know. It's like, it's not, people are like, is therapy fun? And I'm like, I wouldn't call it fun.
I can imagine you want to get graded in your therapy and then graduate from therapy.
Basically. No, and that's like what I would do. Like I'd briefly been in therapy my sophomore year. And then one day I just kind of decided like, I'm good. Like I'm fine now. And so, cause it's for me, it's like highs and lows. So like, I'll feel really, really good and I'm really awesome. And like, I feel like I can take on the world. And then it's like, I don't feel like I can get out of bed for 3 days and I have to like drag myself through life. So when I was in therapy, I'd go when it's like those low moments, but then the second I like flipped and it was back on like that high point, I was like, yes, I'm fine. I'm back. Thank you for your services. They're no longer needed. Like, I can take on the world again.
It is true. As like high achieving athletes, I feel like the mentality of therapy is great. Like, how do I master this skill? How do I learn this thing? Because that's how we've learned our sport. So the minute you sit down in that office, you're like, just tell me what to do and I'll do it because I'm a hard worker. And it's not that easy. It's a long going, lifelong process of understanding yourself, and it's never really going to end. You can only just get better at handling it.
Right. And that's something like I'm still learning and still dealing with, because I don't like to go to therapy when I feel good. Like, I don't want to go in there and be like, oh, let's unpack, you know, all this stuff from my life. Like, no, I feel great. Like, I'm fine. And that's something that I definitely had to work through. Like, it took me a long time to accept like depression and being something that I associate with myself, because I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to identify with it. For me, it felt like that's something that happens to like other people. Not that there's anything wrong with people it happens to, but I was like, that's not me. And so I think I was running from that for a long time, when in reality, if I just accepted like in high school that this is something that's part of my life, I probably would have had a much easier time in college coping with it. Mm-hmm. So what helped me was like, Dior was the first person I told. And then one of my other friends and I had a long conversation, and she was like, you know, this is me too. This is my experience too. I'm having a hard time. I don't feel happy a lot of the time. A lot of the times it feels like I'm coasting through life. And so for me to see another Black woman say that, it was really impactful, because it just felt like as a Black woman, it just feels like we're walking in so many different spaces on a tightrope, trying to fit into like these narrow boxes of who we're supposed to be, trying not to be overly stereotypical, trying to stand up for ourselves, like dealing with kind of this double sword of racism and sexism. And so I was like, I'm exhausted. And to hear another Black woman be like, I'm exhausted too, like, and it's okay, was kind of mind blowing for me. And then Coach Carol Smith Gilbert, after indoor nationals, I got hurt at that meet and couldn't run. And she was like, come sit in my office. And she's like, what's been going on? Like, you're off. Like, something is not right. Like, your energy hasn't been right. You're smiling, but your eyes are like dead. Like, and so we had like a really honest conversation. And I told her, I was like, this whole year, I haven't been who I think I am. You know, I haven't been my image of myself, and I've been struggling, and I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how I'm supposed to be a team captain and an upperclassman when I can't even get my own life together. And so then Coach Carol was the second person who was like, let's get you with a therapist's office, and like, let's get you talking to somebody who can help you handle it. And so just having like three different Black women in my life, all the different ages, say like, it's okay, and like, you're not the only one, was really important for me. And so that's kind of when, that was about March of last year. So that's when I got back in a psychologist's office for the first time in over a year. And that really, really helped me just kind of set some things straight and figure myself out.
And do you feel like with their nod to you that it was okay, that had such an impact on you, you felt okay taking it more seriously and really diving into your therapy sessions?
Yeah. I think for me, I kind of kept looking at it as, this is a temporary thing. Like, this is just where I am right now, but I can either work myself out of it, or I'll get a grade that makes me feel good, or I'll win nationals or something, and then like, I'll be better. And having those conversations like really shed light on like, it's not about collecting achievements to make yourself feel better. It's about, you need to do the work. You need to kind of work through the stuff that's making you feel badly, work through the insecurities and the anxiety that you have, instead of just pushing it to the side and trying to fill that space with, like, it's not meaningless, but with an achievement, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Cause it's never going to fill the thing you need to fill.
Right.
And was this in, what year was this conversation with Coach Carol?
This was last year. So this is my junior year / the year I graduated. I know it's a mess.
Is this the same year as the 4x400 relay at the championship?
Yes, yes. So for context, it goes, so indoor nationals is in March. I strain my hamstring, can't run, have a conversation with Coach Carol, come back, then graduation happens. I speak at graduation, then nationals. I win a national title individually, then drop the baton on the 4x4. So that was like
a lot to unpack. Before we get to the baton story, which I'm dying to dive into with you, I do want to rewind to the grad speech, because that was the first time you publicly opened up to thousands about your experiences with depression and mental health. And it had been, as we've heard through this podcast, so difficult for you to even open up in the first place. So what made you want to get honest on that stage that day for the first time in your life?
Yeah. Basically, I'd finally finished my thesis that I'd been like agonizing over for an entire year. And this is morning of the speech. And so it's like 4 a.m. And I kind of told you about this during the
For those listening, she was chosen to give a commencement speech at graduation for all the student athletes at USC graduation. Okay. Play.
Yeah. And you know, like a typical college student, I procrastinated on writing the speech. And so it's day of, I'm celebrating in like my living room because yay, I finished my thesis. And I'm like, oh crap. Graduation is today. I have to speak. Like, what am I going to say? And so I'd gone through a couple different ideas in my head about like, okay, well, I could talk about like my team, I guess. I could talk about like, you know, freshman year was hard and my grandfather died, but look at me now. And like everything that I kind of been thinking of just sounded like it, none of this, my ideas were inauthentic, but they weren't like the whole truth. And so it felt really wrong to only talk about like one part of what had been going on. And then I just kind of was at this point where like, I was just tired of pretending and I was tired of acting like everything was fine. And it felt like if I got up and gave a whole speech, like everything was fine, it would be like, not only like a betrayal of myself, but of all the people who had taken their time to speak to me and say like, it's okay, go to therapy, like you're gonna be all right. And I didn't have anything else to say anymore. Like I wasn't lying, I guess, but it felt that way. Like it felt like if I got up there and said anything but the truth, it would be getting up there and lying to everybody. So I kind of throughout the day, like I went to sleep for a little bit. And then throughout the day, I just started like writing little notes on my phone about things that had happened, things that I might want to touch on. And then I was like, I'm just going to get up and see what comes out. And that was what came out. And I think one of the real driving forces behind it was if I had said something earlier, someone would have been able to say to me, it's okay. And how important it was to have Black women say that to me. And so it was like, one, if anybody hears this, then great. Like, I hope that they can come to terms with their stuff. But for like the other Black girls out there, like if in high school, like, you know, a prominent Black athlete had gotten up and said, like, I'm a Black woman and I have depression, that would have been super impactful for me. So I was like, you know, this can reach one person, one young Black girl who's like me, who thinks, you know, achieving is going to solve like the hurt inside, then fine. Like it'll be worth the discomfort. And so that was kind of what fueled it. And so I have my little notes on my phone. I didn't even read them. So I wish I had put, like, when I watched the speech, one thing that drives me crazy is like, I have my phone in my hand. I'm waving it around.
It's not that bad. I watched it today. There's barely any phone. Not as much as you said.
Can't stop looking at it every time. I'm like, put it down. Just put it down.
And close your eyes and listen, because that's the better part of it. How did it feel to have such a warm reaction from everyone who just celebrated and loved you for that? And you realized that all this time, you know, it wasn't something you needed to hide or that you needed to feel ashamed of.
It was overwhelming. That was a really vulnerable moment for me. So to have people say just one, that it was a good speech, because part of me was like, okay, well, this might like crash and burn since I didn't write anything down. So one, to know that the speech made sense and like was coherent and had like the structure that people could follow was great. But just to have people be like, I see you and I understand and it's okay and we accept you, and that was amazing and it was powerful. It was really special. And then to go out with my family and like take pictures and stuff, and then people were still coming up to me and they're like, you don't know me, but that was amazing. That was amazing to hear. It was great. I felt very supported.
For someone who's so prepared and so high achieving, I can't believe you didn't have like an anxiety attack that morning of with no speech. I mean, I literally had a freak out when you told me the story the first time, because I was like, I would be losing my mind if it was the day of something and I didn't have anything, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's when like the theater kid came out in me, because people don't know this about me, but I was like very into theater in middle school. Like,
I love
there's
that.
This thing called forensics, and it's like competitive acting basically. And I was all about that in middle school. So no, I've done public speaking doesn't really scare me at all, right? Just because I have a lot of experience with it. So yeah, I mean, I was nervous, but I think I felt better that it just felt like something that needed to come from the heart versus something that I read from a piece of paper.
And it's so cool that kind of in your most defining moment of college, which people could argue is the accomplishment of earning the right and the credibility to be chosen for this honor, there was no preparation. You were fully yourself and you did amazing. And I think that kind of goes to show, looking back on everything you've done, that just being yourself and being honest at the end of the day is success.
Yeah, definitely. I'd spent so much time trying to live up to like this perfect image I'd created that it became like a prison for me. And so to have that moment just to be free and to say what I wanted to say without agonizing over every detail and figuring out what the perfect word was and, you know, my transitions and all that, I think that was, it was very freeing to have that moment and to just let people see me versus the version of me I've wanted to put out.
I love that. That's the only version that most good people in your life will want to see anyways. And then after that, we now go into your next season. So we get to this infamous yet life-defining, person-defining moment, which I didn't know about. And I don't know if that makes you feel better, but I know when sometimes something's happened to you, you think that like everyone at USC is going to know. Like the first time I heard about this was in preparing to interview you the first time. But I really would love to talk about the story because it is heartbreaking. And I think that heartbreak is something many athletes can relate to. And also just this sense of being with the team and having people rely on you and experiencing that. So I mean, are you're willing to talk about maybe this day?
Yeah, we can talk happened? About it.
Okay,
yeah, we can talk about it.
So have you ever had anxious thoughts about something like this happening in a race?
Honestly, not really. I've never had like baton handoff issues. It's never been something that you see it happen, but it's never been something that happened to me personally. The previous year, the 4x4 like had like a bobbled handoff that almost like, you know, derailed the relay. So that was, I guess, the closest I'd come to having my own moment with it, but it wasn't my handoff. So I'd never really had like a whole lot of anxious thoughts about the baton or the handoff or anything like that itself, but I definitely had thoughts about my performance on the relay. And I felt like during the season, I felt like I was holding myself back and I was just having issues running the open four, and I was trying to overmanage the race instead of just running. And I just couldn't get my rhythm together. I couldn't get my race structure together, and I was overthinking it. So I was overthinking a completely different part of the race. And then I honestly think that's what happened at Nationals. I didn't run my leg as well as I should have. And I was in a jam, and I was like, you know, so focused on like, we needed to win the relay to win the meet. And I was like, kind of, when I look back on it in that moment, it was like, okay, well, am I allowed to curse on here?
Yeah.
Sorry, I should have asked that earlier.
You can,
but I was like, shit, like I got to get the baton to like Kaylin, like we got to win this thing. Like, and so I'm in this jam and it got really tight. And I don't know if I got bumped, if I hit somebody else, I don't know what happened, but like the next thing I know I'm stumbling. And so then it was like, stay on your feet. Like, don't lose this for the team. And then I did, and I was like, okay, yes. And I was like, oh my God, where's the baton? It was on the freaking ground. So it was, I hadn't had anxious thoughts about ever dropping the baton before, but I'd definitely been anxious about not doing enough, not living up to what I'm supposed to do, not contributing correctly to the relay. And I think that got the best of me in that moment, whether or not I got bumped or something knocked out of my hands. I feel like I shouldn't have been in that position anyway, if I had run my leg better. And yeah, I mean, it was, it was devastating. Like, there's no other way to say it. It was the lowest moment of my career on the track, just because I felt like everyone was counting, not, I mean, on me, but on the relay. Everyone was counting on the relay to finish it off. And because of me, we didn't.
Right.
So it's still hard to talk about, but yeah. It was terrible.
And it was recent, and it was very painful. And for context, Anna was in a relay, and it's one of those baton handoff for us non-track runners. It was one of those baton handoff relays, and I believe you were the third leg, and it was in her running to give it to her anchor leg that she had a moment where she stumbled and the baton was dropped, which obviously, as we know, with Division I running, any pause, I mean, the rest of the pack has just, they're miles ahead.
Exactly.
Now.
So
in picking up that baton and running to your anchor, like, what was going through your head?
Oh, I was shocked.
Like, were you like in disbelief? It's like, what just happened?
Literal disbelief. I honestly felt like, have you ever had like a nightmare about like something happening while you're playing like your sport? Like, I used to have nightmares all the time about like missing a race or something. And it honestly felt like one of those nightmares when you wake up and you're not sure if it really happened or not. Like, I picked it up and I just ran to Kaylin and I was like, wait, is this real? Like, is this really like my life? Is this really happening? And then I handed it to her and like just collapsed onto the field and like broke down. Because I mean, it was our anchor leg. They had handed off like what felt like hours ago. But I think that, yeah, we can hope for a miracle like what happened in 2018, but it was, you know, it was different. And I knew it was pretty much over not for us. And yeah, we were still going to like finish second, right? But we wanted to win the title. And I just freaking let it slip, like literally let it slip out of my hand. And yeah, I mean, I was like inconsolable. And then they always like hustle us off the infield so that like the next leg, the people who are still running can like come off and like finish. So then one of the officials was like, I know, but you have to move. And I was like, literally like, I can't. And so finally like somebody got me up and I went off to the side and like just like literally just on my knees, like sobbing. And one of my friends, she goes to Baylor, like she came, she laid on top of me and she was like, it doesn't define, like I'm crying when I'm talking about it, but she was like, this doesn't define you. It doesn't define. And she just kept saying that over and over again. And I was just like losing my mind. Cause I couldn't believe it. And it felt like, okay, well, what was the point of overcoming all that stuff? What was the point of finally admitting like everything that's been going on just to like fail, you know? But I think what was the most powerful moment was like my teammates came up to me and they're like, it's not your fault. Like, they're like, we wouldn't have been in the meet. We wouldn't have had a chance to win if you didn't do what you needed to do in your individual event. So like, breathe, like shake it off. Like, I feel like I cried for like 3 hours straight. But basically everybody came and rallied around me and Coach Carroll was like, you are coming back next year. Like, it's okay. We have more work to do. It's okay. And everyone kept saying like, you won an individual title. But for me, it was like, well, like who cares about that? Like, screw that. I just like, did we not just see what just happened? So yeah, I mean, it was like, it almost feels like a dream still when I talk about it, like just the worst possible dream ever. But it was another moment when just people just like came around me to say like, you're allowed to mess up. Like, you're allowed to not be the one to fix every problem. You're allowed to make mistakes. And people from other teams, like a coach from another team came to me and was like, you're the captain of the team for a reason. This doesn't make you less of a teammate. It doesn't make you less of a captain. It doesn't make you less of an athlete. Like, it's okay. So it definitely just one of the most difficult periods of my life. And, you know, it seems so trivial now when we're talking about like, we're living in the age of like coronavirus and there's all these protests going on, but it was just unbelievable for me. And I cried like the whole night, I feel like on and off the whole night. And then we had to go to drug testing afterwards. And it was like, we're there with the 4x4 who won the meet. And it's like, we're sitting there, we all are waiting to get the drug testing done. And I'm like, great, like, please someone just get me out of this situation. Like, everyone hurry up in peace so I can go back to my room and cry, which is terrible.
But I was really impressed, and it shows a lot of character that you stayed around to do some interviews that day, which is not easy to do. And many people would just go into the locker room or run away, yet you stayed to speak and talk about what had happened. What inspired you to find the words in that moment? Because I think that really shows a true leader. As much as the moment did not define you negatively, I think it did define your incredible character as an athlete, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing I wanted to just say in that moment was just share my appreciation for my teammates, and that, I don't know, they were like, let's talk about you winning a national championship. And I was like, does that matter? So I don't know. It, in those kind of, I don't know if you've ever been to a track meet, but at the end of nationals, like, everyone's like in this big pack because we're doing awards. So that's when they came and found me, when we were waiting for like all the awards to go on. And it was like, there wasn't really anywhere to go. And so I was like, sure, like, whatever, let's just do it. And I almost just wanted to apologize. Like, I felt like I had to, acknowledge, like, yo, I screwed up. Like, I seriously screwed up. And I just wanted to give credit to my team and just to say, like, we couldn't get it done this time, but everything I can do for next year to get it done, like, I will do. And I was training my tail off. Like, I was training my tail off this year. I was ready. So it's tough that, you know, we don't get the chance to go out there, and
right.
We've been running super good 4x4s all year. And so it's really tough that, yeah, as much as I want to like defend my individual title or whatever, I wanted that redemption for us. I wanted to prove to my team, like, whatever I can do to get us the title, I'm going to do, you know,
even though
I know they're fine. Like,
yeah. What's your advice to any athletes listening who have had similar experiences where, you know, the last point, like, they made the mistake or something happened, and same crying, inability to sleep, those moments where you feel like you have failed? Now, having gone through what you've been through, what would your advice be to them?
I guess my advice would just be, don't pin your entire image of yourself, your entire self-worth, or don't look for validation solely from sports, because inevitably there's going to be a time where you make a mistake. Is it as big as the one I made? I don't know, but it's, to err is human, right? So I would say those mistakes don't have to shape you, and whether or not you have another season, whether or not you have another game, it's not the end of you. It's not the end of your life. And that the people who value you will love you in spite of your mistakes, and that it's okay to love yourself in spite of your mistakes, and that you don't have to beat yourself up or feel like you have to like make amends forever. You know, it's mistakes happen. And that's something I'm still working through, is like accepting that, yeah, I made a mistake, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of my career. It's not the end of me, the person. So that, I guess that's my main advice, just accept that it happened and people mess up, and it's okay. It's okay. You're human.
It's incredible how self-aware you are and well-spoken you are about everything you've been through, given that it was so recent, right? It's not like you're like, 5 years ago, this all happened to me. You're like, literally last year was the darkest time of my life. And then this moment was so fresh in my life. How have you kind of gone from those unhealthy coping mechanisms and kind of bottling up everything to now being able to sit here, be so honest and vulnerable and say, like, so thoughtfully, yeah, I was covering things up. I was bottling things. I wasn't handling it right. What allowed you to kind of make that switch and become so aware of your mental health and comfortable in your experiences?
I think for starters, part of me was always aware that what I was doing probably wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. Part of me was always aware, like, yeah, I should probably go see one of the sports psychologists, but the rest of me was like, yeah, shut up. So I think that what helps me speak on it now is that part of me knew, like, that things weren't right and that I needed to get myself together. But I think the main reason I can speak on it is just because the second I started opening up, it almost became impossible to stop. Like, once I that taste of what it feels like to not conceal, to not hide, I couldn't go back to what it was, because it was so much more painful to pretend everything was fine than it is to just be open. And so, yeah, like, I'd rather cry in public. I'd rather get do the interview after the meet, after the baton drop, and cry than spend a whole year crying in my room alone the way I had about some other stuff. So I think for me, it kind of came a return after I gave the speech of like, this is how I want to live now. I don't want to pretend to be somebody I'm not. I don't want to act like things are fine when they aren't. It felt like doing that had been a disservice to myself. And then getting so much feedback from people who said like, hey, hearing you say that helped me. It just felt like to be dishonest with them. And I go back to my high school every time I'm in town and I work out with them. And it's like, I can't look at them. I can't look at young Black girls and pretend that everything is fine and pretend that I'm something that I'm not in front of them. So I think that's really the main reason why I speak now, because I know what it's like to be in that place. And I know that even though it's still odd to me, there are people who like look up to me, which is something I'm still grappling with and something that still is difficult for me. But for those people who look up to me, it's not right in my mind to not tell the truth. It's not right to have this one time where I'm like, hey, I was sad, and then pretend I'm always fine all the time. Because yeah, like this year, this most recent year has been a great year for me. Like I've been coping with things better. I've been handling things in a healthier way. I've made so much progress. But I think it's important to show people that it takes work, and it wasn't just, you know, that one magic fix overnight that got me to this point. It was, you know, an up and down path. It was a winding road of, you know, heartbreak and struggle, but then, okay, let me talk to my teammates. Let me talk to my friends. Let me talk to my boyfriend. Like it's been a process. And I think that's why I feel obligated to speak, because I am very fortunate. Like I have access to therapy. I've got a good support system. I don't have to, you know, stress about like financial things. So I think for me, I feel obligated to speak on my life in an honest way, in a way that, you know, if anyone else is going through these things, they can say, okay, well, shit, like if Anna has gone through that stuff and you know, I want it to be looked at as perfect. So sometimes people legitimately were buying into that, you know? And so just to break that down for people and for myself too, I think that's why I have to speak on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
In a lot of ways.
No, it makes sense. And I totally relate. And my favorite thing was what you said in the beginning of like, once you started, like you never looked back. And I completely relate to that. And I think that was so well said. And lastly, but probably most importantly, you've started an organization for Black Trojan athletes. And I think it's incredible what you're doing to make sure that what's happening right now is a permanent thing that has permanent change, especially in our community. And right. I am just wanting to know what inspired you to be this proactive and make sure that you were going to see this change and, you know, go as far as to contact the director of athletics and make sure that this change is I love it. I love it. Like I am so here for student athletes advocating for what is right. In all facets, but especially something like this, which is so necessary. So what has that process been like, and how have you felt to have that recognition from the school? And then also, what are you hoping to do going forward?
Yeah, so basically the process started with, it was just a meeting initially, because my team, we have like, you know, we have a group text, and we had been talking about what was going on, and I was hurting, my teammates were hurting, and it was like, is SC going to say anything? Because I mean, you know, like they over-communicate about everything, like be at this meeting, be at this tutoring, like this is mandatory, blah, 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 blah. But then it was like, okay, well, where are you guys right now? Where is the message? Where is the teamworks? Where is the email? And for days it had been after George Floyd was murdered, for days it had been nothing. And so I think silence is like the worst route to take. Because even if you make a statement and you mess up, whatever, but when you're silent, people interpret it in their own way. And so we were talking and we're like, is SC going to do anything? They put out this Instagram post that I felt very strongly about, that it wasn't good. That was, I don't know if you saw it, but it was like the image of like the student athletes with their arms around each other was like, be the change. I was like, this is very generic. like, I don't know, if you're going to put something out, address why. Like, don't just put out this kind of vague thing. And so then I talked to my head coach and I talked to Ms. Joyce Bell-Limbrick. And okay, so just so you know, sorry to interrupt myself, it's saying my internet connection is unstable. So I don't know if I might end up leaving again, but if that happens, I'll just like call you back.
It's okay. It cut out a tiny bit, but it's been good.
Okay. Sorry. So it really got started because I reached out to my head coach and Ms. Joyce Bell-Limbrick and was like, can we do something? And they were like, okay, well, let's do a meeting. And so then I just started DMing a whole bunch of people, like spread the word to my teammates, spread the word on Instagram. And a lot of people had independently been thinking like, we need an organization, we need some kind of group. Some of my teammates had created this whole idea in a class. Sade, who's on the soccer team, like immediately was like, we gotta get a group going, like we need an organization. And so we came into the meeting and we had conversation about, how's everybody doing? What are you guys feeling? What do you need? And then at the end it was like, so what is happening next? And pretty much everyone was like, you know, organization, we want a group. And so from there, we created UBSAA and we spent about 2.5 weeks just nailing down, who are we? What's our mission statement? What do we want? What is important to us?
Is that United Black Student Athlete Association?
Yes, yes. Sorry, I'm like so in the group that I'm like, I forget
no,
that.
No, you're good. I honestly just guessed the name. So it just goes to show how great the what are they called again? When you just make it the letters?
Initials, acronym.
Yeah, the acronym.
Initials? Acronym, okay.
Initials would be, I think, for like people, but the acronym is so great because I look at it and I can already guess what it says, which is what you want.
Yeah, I can't take credit for it. I didn't come up with it. I don't know who came up with that. But we had tossed about around a bunch of different names and then, you know, United Black Student Athletes Association, with the understanding that, you know, it's open to non-Black student athletes who are allies. But there was like an Athletes of Color Association name that was kind of thrown out in the beginning, but people were very, very receptive and fond of UBSAA. So yeah, we went with that and then we've been meeting ever since. And so it was interesting because like people thought that that like we had one meeting and then put out that statement. And I was talking to a reporter and she was like, yeah, so after the meeting you wrote it. And I was like, no, we spent 17 days to be like very specific, coming up with all of that stuff and writing it and workshopping it, putting it there. There were like 5 or 6 different versions of like the full statement that eventually went out. And then there was a group that did like the condensed version for Instagram.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's been beyond anything else that happens. What's been really cool is to get to know so many different people in the athletic department on a different level, because I didn't know one of my teammates, Bailey Weir. She's been doing a lot of the graphics. I've been training with Bailey for 2.5 years. I had no idea she had those skills. So it's been cool to just be with everybody and figure out what are people passionate about and talk about like the Black student athlete experience at USC and how, yes, it can be amazing and rewarding, but at the same time, most of us have a story about, yo, somebody said something racist to me, or there were all these microaggressions, or I was the only Black person on my team and I felt alone. Like everybody's got a story. And I think that's why it was important to create an organization that's long lasting so that we can work to not only address this moment, but make USC better, make LA better, all that kind of stuff.
And you said how important it was for 3 women who understood your exact experience to validate your mental health. And so now it's very cool to think that you have created and, well, you've had a big helping hand in starting this association, that the next Black athlete, like you've mentioned before, is going to have a place to go and they don't have to seek it out. And that's so special. And that will be long lasting after you graduate, after your teammates graduate. And it's just really cool how you've used everything you've experienced and gone through to be the change and help others. And it's really inspiring to me. And I commend you for all of that. And I'm so grateful that you have been so open and shared everything with us today. And we don't take that lightly. And I'm sure someone listening to this has been greatly impacted by you. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. I hope so. And, you know, I think that was the ultimate motivation that, you know, we were all kind of sharing these stories and we were like, we don't want anyone to go through what we've been through. I don't want, you know, any young Black girl moving across the country to be depressed for years and not say anything because she feels like no one understands. So that's the goal, just to have a space where we can talk and deal with these things and then try to make a change in our communities. And thank you for saying all that. I really appreciate it.
I wish I still went to USC so I could join the group as an ally and come to the meetings.
We have space for alumni. So if
you
want,
really?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of interest from alumni. And so we're like trying to figure out, you know, how we want them to be involved, because we do want that participation. I think what it'll look like going forward is like maybe some kind of newsletter, keeping alumni up to date on what we're doing. And then when we have events, inviting them to come out if they're local.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely open.
Okay, great. Well, then
if you're interested, you know, I'll put your email on the sheet.
I am. Okay, I'll email you about it. I am interested. I think that those two ideas are great ideas. And also, the Trojan family is so strong and long-lasting in all other aspects of the school, so there's no reason why the UBSAA shouldn't have that wide reach as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thinking, you know, like, one thing that I think can be better at USC is the connections we make amongst teams. Cause like we were at SC at the same time, but we didn't know each other.
Yes.
And it's like, so, you know, things would have been probably different if I'd been like, hey, are you a sad girl too? Cool.
Yeah. Like, no, literally I feel the same way. And it's so funny. I actually remember seeing you around and thinking like, you are so put together. She's so intimidating. Like, you know, and then it's just like, to see you're not like that. But I get people saying I'm intimidating too. I know the complex. I'm just like, people are like, well, we didn't want to like talk to you because we were scared. I'm like, well, then I have no friends. So what am I supposed to do?
Right. And then in my mind, I'm like, yes, they hate me. Yeah. No, everyone's so like, you always had your life together. And I'm like, did I?
But
then, or was I just like putting on a show?
Yeah. That's so funny. They definitely need to do that. It's just tough because I remember thinking about like, I did some of the core power events with like the nutritionist to just meet other girls, but no one wants to go because you're tired. And I barely even have time to hang out with my own friends that I choose, let alone like go try to network. But then it's like, it is so important. I almost wish they made it more mandatory, like your freshman year between the teams, for sure. Or even just having us room with, I mean, it depends on the coach, but we were supposed to room with volleyball. I don't know if you guys had to room with track.
Yeah, we room with track.
Yeah. Pros and cons to both.
Always. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like, honestly, sometimes it feels like if you don't start making those connections outside of your team by like your sophomore year, you're just going to get so in your own pattern that it like probably won't happen, you know? But I hope that UBSAA, and I know Taz is kind of restructuring. I hope that that's the beginning of just like, we're all here at the same time going through similar experiences. We can't all relate exactly to what everyone's going through, but because we have the commonality of being like Trojan athletes, like we should at least know each other. So hopefully that's something we can work on. And then that's, you know, the alumni piece too. Like when you're in the Trojan family, it's a lifetime commitment, right? So of course, like the alumni should be part of it, and just being able to reach out to them, and hopefully like no one wants to kick me off campus, but I can come back in like 20 years and be like, hey, like, this was me at SC. Does anybody like, are there Black girls who relate? Like, let's talk about it. Cause I was literally you at one point. But that's very far down the line.
I love it.
So
though.
It's just
so
it's
ambitious.
Exciting to be here.
Channeling all of that, you know, for the betterment of helping the next person. So thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate your time. And I'm just really grateful that we got connected. Even though it was later than we both probably wanted, I'm still glad that we are friends now. And I know that someone else at USC had a very similar story to mine. So thank you so much. I appreciate it, Anna.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me on. It's very cool. Thank you for my first podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Real Pod. I hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. If you want to keep up with Anna and follow her final year in college athletics, her Instagram is at Anna Cockrell, AnnaCockrell. Thank you guys for listening to Real Pod. Don't forget to subscribe and review it wherever you get your podcasts. And also, special announcement, if you made it this far, I would love you to have my community cell phone number. The number is 1-213-214-0917. It is a number connected to my phone. I can text you. I can chat with you. You will receive my weekly updates of wisdom and fun stuff and my daily thoughts. I only am able to have a certain amount of people on this number, so I want to make sure that I'm giving it to my diehard supporters. And I feel like if you're at the very end of a RealPod episode, that is you. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And I hope you text me, 1-213-214-0917. Thanks again. Appreciate you all listening, and I will see you next Wednesday.